Time now for the Border News Roundup Friday mornings. We get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor and publisher of the Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Been a couple of weeks, Marshall. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Heidi.
All right, so I think we need an update on Towergate. Lots of folks, even if you're not from that region, have been kind of following what's gone on in the city council, and especially when it comes to the former clerk treasurer.
That's right, and we did have a development actually over the Thanksgiving week. It turns out the St. Louis County Attorney has filed an additional charge against the former city clerk treasurer here in Tower. The former clerk treasurer was suspended from her job back in June and then was ultimately fired from her position in August, and now she's been facing some criminal matters, including originally she was charged with falsifying city records and still facing prosecution on that. That has not been resolved at this point, still in the courts. And then just recently now she was served with a second complaint, this one for destruction of a computer. It was a laptop computer. She had had this at her home, and they suspended her. They asked her to return it, and she informed them that she had destroyed the computer, and she said it had a problem. It had died, in her words, and yet, you know, she never produced any evidence of that. She said she had her son shoot it, and then she ran it over with her pickup truck and then burned at least portions of it in a fire, and then threw the rest in the landfill. So that's the story that she gave to police at the time. Because the value of that computer was in excess of $1,000, that makes it a felony, actually, what she has acknowledged doing. So she's going to be facing an additional charge there as well. Her next court appearance now is December 19th, and it'll be interesting to see exactly what her legal defense is going to be here.
Yeah,
we'll be watching and report on that when it happens.
Yeah, it's strange that she gave all those details. I've never known anyone to do that to a laptop that wasn't working for them.
It was very unusual, yes.
Yeah.
I've never heard of anybody take such an approach, you know.
No,
Your computer isn't, I mean, there have been times where I've been tempted to shoot
right,
my computer,
sure.
But, you know.
but would you burn it then and then do run over it, you know? Yeah, strange. But things are still going well with the city kind of getting back on track after
it is. It's a long process, though. I mean, there were a lot of issues. Things were really a mess, especially with the city's finances and just, I mean, everything. And every day, the new clerk treasurer, who's very good, she's constantly finding new things and new problems that she's got to address. She says it's like a giant, very intricate knot, and she has to figure out how to unwind it.
Let's move on to another story. I'm hoping you can help us understand. There's always kind of details about copper nickel mining and what's happening, and especially with the Twin Metals project. And the DNR came out with some news about how they are going to inspect it. Is that the right word to say? It's not right.
Well, how they're going to
review
it, because we are expecting to receive a mine plan. The Twin Metals has announced that they, you know, expect to put out a plan for their mining operation near Ely. They hope to have it out before the end of the year, so that it could be coming out very soon. And whenever it does come out, the DNR announced here just this past week that they plan to conduct their own environmental review on that. Now, folks might recall that back when they did the review for the environmental impact statement for the Polymet mine, the Forest Service and the DNR and all the federal agencies worked together on one EIS. That's not going to happen this time, according to the DNR. They've decided they are going to conduct their own environmental impact statement, and that will be done under the provisions of what's known as MEPA, which is the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act. And, of course, a lot of times folks are familiar with the national version of that, which is NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. But in any case, the state does have a similar process in statute, and that's what they say they're going to follow, and they're authorized, obviously, under state law to do that. There were certainly a number of questions about why the DNR was making this decision. I think it's somewhat apparent that there may be a level of mistrust with the DNR currently, you know, or whether or not the federal government will conduct a thorough environmental study. You know, in the past, that hasn't been much of a concern, but I think it's pretty clear that the DNR and the Walz administration are concerned that, you know, the Trump administration may try to short-circuit the environmental review process. They've been certainly doing things a lot differently than has been done in the past with the EPA currently. And so I think this is a means of protecting the state. At least that's what the DNR says, is that this is a means of ensuring that whatever environmental review goes forward will be done thoroughly and will be science-based. And it's also interesting, too, by doing this, they also indicated that they expect the federal government to provide them all relevant information. And among the documents they're going to be seeking are any studies or anything that was prepared in the roughly 18 months that the federal government was conducting that study, the two-year study into the impact of a mining withdrawal or a mineral withdrawal affecting that Twin Metals area. Certainly members of Congress have been seeking that information. I know Betty McCollum from the 4th District here in Minnesota has certainly made a push to get that information made public, but the Trump administration so far has been very resistant to releasing any of that information. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not the administration will release that to the state now as part of the state's review of this whole project. And the DNR said if they do receive that information from the Trump administration, they do plan to make that information public.
Okay. So we don't know yet what that review will be. Is this good news for either opponents or proponents, or is it just something new in the process?
Well, you know, it depends. I think, you know, at this point, I think both sides are kind of saying, well, this is fine. I'm sure that, you know, from the point of view of Twin Metals, they're probably not thrilled at this. I mean, obviously, they've been quite successful in getting their way with the Trump administration, and I'm sure they probably were thinking if they, you know, could have an environmental review done under the current administration, that they would stand a good chance of getting a favorable outcome and probably have it done fairly quickly. Now, with the state doing its own process, you know, it's certainly likely to mean that this is going to be longer, and there's probably going to be a little more scrutiny. You know, while the Trump administration seems enthusiastic about this Twin Metals project, there's a lot of concern at the state level that it's, you know, given its proximity to the boundary waters, that it may be too high a risk. I mean, obviously, the prior governor, Governor Dayton, had, you know, he basically said he wasn't going to allow it to advance. And you know, Governor Walz, by agreeing to have a separate review process here, certainly is suggesting that he's got some fairly serious concerns as well.
We'll move on to another story you covered recently that hits home for you, that's for sure, Marshall. Your favorite birds have not been showing up at your feeder like they usually do this time of year.
That is true. You know, we've been feeding birds up here for 35 years. One of the most reliable and my favorite winter bird. We've had them every single year since we've lived here, and so far I have not seen a single one, and I'm talking about the pine grosbeaks. For folks who aren't familiar with them, they're just a spectacular bird, especially the males. It's just this beautiful kind of pinkish-purple color. They're very gentle birds, and they have a beautiful song, and they just brighten up everybody's winter bird feeder up here. And their absence has definitely been noted by a lot of people up here. I know the Ely Field Naturalist, there's been a lot of, they have a listserv, email listserv, and there's been all kinds of folks, you know, asking about, you know, where they are, who's seeing any. And the bottom line is they are not here. And while it's bad news for us, it doesn't appear that it's bad news for the pine grosbeaks, because apparently, from what I've recently read, and there are surveys that are done in Canada about, you know, food sources for birds, and the most recent one out of kind of central northern Canada is that the food crop for pine grosbeaks, and that would be things like mountain ash, berries, black ash, seeds, and then just, you know, cones, spruce cones, balsam cones, and pine as well. They appear to be very abundant. And so it appears that the pine grosbeaks are probably sticking close to their summer breeding territory. And, you know, while we have pine grosbeaks here in the winter, in summer they do breed just a couple hundred miles north of here, so really not that far away. But in any case, it looks like they have enough food there, and so there's really no reason for them to come south at this point. You know, birds don't, if they don't have to migrate, you know, there's really no reason to do it. It expends energy. It, you know, puts them at greater risk to predators and other things along the way. So as long as they have adequate food supply, they can winter through just fine. I mean, obviously, pine grosbeaks are very hardy. If they've got food in their normal summer breeding range, they're probably going to stick around there. And, you know, we're going to see a few here and there, my guess is. We haven't had any at our feeders yet. I'm sure, that, you know, during the course of the winter, a few might show up. And especially later in the winter, it does happen sometimes that as food supplies start to dwindle in some of those areas, that the birds do kind of move around. So we may still have some come through, and I sure hope so, because I think it would be a, it just wouldn't be the same here in winter without the pine grosbeaks at the feeder.
Well, before we go, today is an open house at the Timber Jay offices in celebration of 30 years, and we just want to wish you congratulations, Marshall.
Well, thanks, Heidi. Yeah, and anybody out there listening, if you want to take a drive up to Tower, the open house is from 11 to 1, and we expect to have most, if not all, of our staff here, and people can tour the headquarters, the world headquarters here at the Timber Jay, right on the main street of Tower. So we'll have some cake and coffee and other goodies. So,
if you want to answer this question next week, because I'm throwing it at you, but how have things changed in 30 years? Have they changed for you?
Oh, boy. It'd be a long answer.
Yeah, yeah. Sometime we'll talk about it.
Changed for the better, I can say that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Sounds good. Well, that open.
We know what we're doing now.
Good.
We don't always get it right still, but we know what we're doing anyway. We know when we've screwed up.
So. That open house is today from 11 to 1 at the Tower World Headquarters of the Timber Jay. And if you need more information, you can call us at 800-662-5799. You can't miss it, right on Main Street. Thanks, Marshall.
All right. Thank you, Heidi.
Talk to you next week.
Sounds good.